Good afternoon. My name is Julian, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to Park Aerospace Corp's Fiscal Year 2026 Q4 Investor Call and Presentation. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question during this time, please simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, please press star two. Thank you. At this time, I will turn today's call over to Mr. Brian Shore, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer. Mr. Shore, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, operator. This is Brian. Welcome all to Park Aerospace's Q4 Investor Conference Call. Thank you for joining us. I have with me, as usual, Mark Esquivel, our President and COO. We published our fourth quarter earnings release just after the close. If you haven't accessed that, you probably want to do that. In the earnings release, there are instructions as to how to access the presentation that we're about to go over. There's a link that's provided. Also, you can access that presentation on our website. You want to do that so the call will be meaningful. So we'll review our presentation, of course, with you, and then we'll be happy to answer questions. Just want to comment that we have a lot of new investors or potential investors at Park. During our third quarter call in January, there were over 150 participants. That's a lot for us. And I suspect that that interest might continue. So the point is that we have a lot of new potential investors or investors, and then we have the veteran investors. So we have to balance between covering the old stuff again and not covering it too much. I know sometimes when we do that, the veteran investors get a little impatient that we're going over things that we already went over. But out of respect for our new blood, new investors, we want to go back and cover some of these things that we cover every quarter. So we'll do the best we can to find a middle ground and compromise. And that, of course, means that nobody's going to be happy. But anyway, we'll do our best, of course. Why don't we go ahead and proceed? And we'll go right to slide two, which is our forward-looking disclaimer language. We're not going to read this for you. But if you have any questions about it, please let us know. Let's go to slide three, table of contents. Slide one, we start with our investor presentation. And in appendix one, there's supplementary financial information. We don't normally cover that during our calls, but please let us know if you have any questions about it. Our practice has been, under table of contents, to feature something about the James Webb Space Telescope. We discovered these little red dots, a new class of object. You think about that, a new class of object. I didn't know what to make of that. Small, extremely red points of light that represent the potential seeding of early supermassive black holes, challenging our understanding of galactic formation and evolution. Thank you, James Webb. And the James Webb was produced with 18 proprietary Park Sigma Stretch. So this is not a high-volume program for us and probably not an opportunity for many spares since the James Webb is in the orbit a million miles away. Probably not going to send anybody up to replace any of the Sigma Stretch. But even though it's a small program in terms of revenue, we feature it every quarter now for the last, I don't know, couple of years because it's just such an incredible thing to be part of. It's just amazing. I mean, it's hard to describe. The words don't even get it. Amazing doesn't really get it. Because almost everything you hear that comes from James Webb says everything we believe, the smartest people in the world, believe about the universe was not true. Sorry, we got to start all over again. So we're just, I don't know how to say it. We're just so thrilled to be part of that, the James Webb. Again, even though from a business financial perspective, it's not a big impact. And like I said, probably no more revenue from the James Webb anytime soon. Let's go on to slide four, going from the, I don't know, the lofty to the, I don't know if it's mundane, but a little different kind of level. Our own quarterly results, important, but maybe not quite important in terms of the, I don't know, the history of the universe perspective. But nevertheless, we'll go over our quarterly results. Q4, Sales, 24,187,000. Gross profits, 6,935,000. Gross margin, 28.7%, which, as you know, we don't like that too much. We don't like where gross margin is below 30%, but when we get the next slide or two, we'll explain what's going on here. That relates to the significant shipment sales of C2B fabric. Adjusted EBITDA, 5,171,000, and EBITDA margin, 24.1%. What do we say about our Q4 during our January 13th Q3 investor call? We said our sales estimate is 23.5 to 24.5, so we came in within the range, maybe kind of the top half, but still within the range. Adjusted EBITDA estimate, four and three quarters to five and a quarter million, and it seems like we came in within the range, maybe the top half of the range, which is good. I need to explain, especially for some of our new potential investors, that when we give an estimate, we're telling you what we think is going to happen. We don't like this kind of thing that people do where they, you know, give a number, but it's, you know, they haircut it by 10%, you know, so they can beat the number and they have a beat. I don't like that term. And these analysts come up with this kind of stuff like it's some game. We're not playing a game here. We don't like that. It makes us uncomfortable. We're not playing a game, but the whole concept, there's a beat. We don't want a beat. When we give you a number, we're telling you what we think is going to happen. And if we're wrong, that means we didn't do a very good job. Now, sometimes we'll be wrong high, sometimes we'll be wrong low, but we're not trying to do that. We're not trying to give you a number that we can beat so we could be a hero. To us, that seems like such a childish waste of time, and I just want you to understand that. So when we say we were in the range, that's a good thing. That means our prediction was right. I probably cover that every quarter because it's a little different with, you know, many other companies, how they do that kind of guidance thing, and it's not something we really have to spend time with. Let's go on to slide five, okay? Talk about Q4 a little bit more. Aerient Group, here we go. And now we're, you know, talking about that gross margin number. Aerient Group business partner agreement, we talk about this every quarter because it's, you know, significant from many perspectives. But in terms of the quarterly P&L, so we entered into the business partner agreement with Aerient in January 22, under which Aerient appointed Park as their exclusive North American distributor for their Raycarb C2B fabric used to produce ablative composite materials for advanced missile programs. Now, we had 7.1 million of C2B fabric sales in Q4. Well, that's a lot. I mean, 7.1 million. What was our number out of 24.1? So it's a, you know, very high percentage. As we previously explained, we sell C2B fabric to our defense industry customers for a small markup. So you think, well, that's not so good. But wait a minute, that's not the whole story. Park sold 1.3 million of ablative materials manufactured with C2B fabric in Q4. And as we also previously explained, our margins for producing and selling ablative materials manufactured with this fabric are significant. Now, what's going on here? When we sell the product, we buy it from Aerient because we're exclusive. We have exclusive rights to buy it in North America. So we sell it to the OEMs because what are they doing? They're stockpiling the product. Where does it go when they stockpile it? In our factory. We don't even ship to them. We hold it for them in our factory. Why are we doing that? They're stockpiling it because obviously you're going to tell us at some point, please make this into your prepreg material. Please produce the material for us. So everything that we stockpile will end up being produced by Park as a blade of material, which is where those margins are very good. So stockpiling is good, and they're doing it because the OEMs are doing it because they're concerned about the availability of this very critical C2B fabric. Let's go on to slide six. Missed shipments. Now, this is interesting because we started talking about this at the beginning of the pandemic. You know, the industry was not doing well. Supply chain, international shipments, so one thing after another, and every quarter with a lot of missed shipments, you know. Now, that calmed down quite a bit over the last couple of years as things kind of got close to, quote-unquote, normal based upon the post-pandemic levels, all right? But what's going on here is this is now reemerging as a problem because now the industry is accelerating, recovering, and the program ramps are accelerating. So now the industry is kind of struggling once again with keeping up from a different perspective, but it's the same kind of phenomenon, it's just from a different perspective. So now we're talking once again about missed shipments, 715,000. Well, that's a lot. And we talk about Q1 or Q1 forecast, it's going to be even more. So it's something to think about. Ultimately, all this product gets produced and shipped, but the industry is now struggling again to keep up as the industry accelerates and ramps. Net impact of tariffs, tariff-related costs. Mark, could you help us with a little perspective on tariffs and tariff-related costs, please?
Yeah, it's the same story as, you know, the last few quarters. Very minimal impact for us. Again, we typically pass these on to our customers through pricing, our pricing contracts, or as we do pricing every few months with our regular business. So no impact for us, but maybe a few $1,000s this quarter.
All right. Thanks, Mark. So why don't we keep going? We can hustle through here. So slide 7 for some of you new folks. This is something we do every quarter for, I don't know, as long as we've been doing presentations, I guess. Our top 5 customers for the quarter in alphabetic order. And we do a little picture that, you know, ties into each of the customers. The top right, you know, you'll hear a lot about this, the PAC-3 Patriot missile system. That's 2 for the price of 1 because that actually is AE Aerospace and L3Harris. So that's nice. We got 1 picture for 2. Kratos is obviously the Kratos BQM. That's a target drone. Middle River Air Structure, we'll talk more about them. That's the Airbus A320 with the LEAP-1 in the engine. And NORDAM is the Boeing Stratotanker. So let's keep going. Pie charts. These have gotten a little boring, but they're becoming interesting again. So we'll take a look at this, Park estimated revenue by aerospace market segment. See, in 21, that was the fiscal 21. Remember, our fiscal year ends in February. That was a pandemic year. Look what happened. It wasn't that military was so great. It's just commercial was almost nothing. Remember that you saw the pictures of, like, the 737s with 2 people on them, or probably more likely they really parked. They weren't flying at all. But commercial aerospace was terrible, and the airlines weren't ordering any airplanes. They were canceling as many as they could. So you see that happened in 21. In 22, 23, 24, and 25, it kind of normalized, quote unquote, for the pandemic level, post-pandemic level, which was, you know, kind of anemic, let's call it. But look at 26. Something is emerging there where the military is actually increasing more than it had been. And if we showed you Q4 of 26, it would be kind of shocking how strong, how significant military is. We're not going to do that because we don't want to get hung up on one quarter. But we think there might be a trend going on here. We look at 26, which, you know, is in the bottom middle of the slide. And let's go on to slide 9, a little more pie chart stuff. This is another slide we include for every quarter. Park loves niche military aerospace programs. The top 5, is that's done by Donna, and this one's done by Elena. Elena's head of customer service at Park. This is her thing. She does it every quarter. Park loves niche military aerospace programs. So these are not necessarily the big programs. These are just, some are big, but some may not be. These are programs of interest. We thought you'd be interested in them. I just want to be clear. Everything we show here, and everything we show every quarter, those are programs we're involved with, that we're supplying into, involved with. We're not just, you know, showing you nice pictures of rockets and planes and cool stuff like that. So we just want you to be aware of it. We don't comment anymore on what we do with these programs because they just got to be too sensitive. But just understand these are all programs that we supply into. The pie chart. Look at missile systems. You know, that's getting to be pretty big there. And that's not, I don't think that's an anomaly. We'll talk about missile systems as we proceed with the presentation. I'm trying to hustle through it because the back end of the presentation, when we get to missile systems, there's a lot to talk about. That's a lot of new stuff also. Slide 10, G Aerospace Jet Engine Programs. We provide a slide almost every, not almost every quarter, very minor changes. I do need to explain for some of our new investors. The firm pricing LTA, it's a requirements contract from 1929 with Middle River Air Structure Systems, who are they? Don't know. They're a sub of SD Engineering Aerospace, who are they? Don't know. We built a redundant factory. That was part of the deal that we actually made. GE Aerospace, when we entered into the LTA through 29, we agreed to build a redundant factory. That was done a while ago. It's in production. Sole source for composite materials for various engine nacelle and thrust reverser components for multiple MRAS programs. We have the A320neo family, 747, the COMAC 919, the COMAC 909, Global 7500, and the next slide is the 777X. Well, what's going on here? These are all GE engines, aren't they? Well, we didn't say anything about GE, and also CFM, which is, you know, a partnership with GE. Yeah, so the thing is that when we entered into this contract, Middle River, MRAS, where they produced the cell and thrust reverser structures for these engines, was a sub of GE. And I think in 19 or 20, I don't remember when, GE sold this MRAS to ST Engineering, which is a large Singapore aerospace company. That's the reason why all these programs are GE Aerospace, they're called GE Aerospace programs. So questions, let me know, but let's just keep moving here. Slide 11. Okay, we already talked about this 777X. That's another one of those GE9X. That's a GE engine, of course. And in this LTA, we also included some from our new film proprietary Park Film Adhesive products, and for composite bond and metal bond, and those products are undergoing qualification. We've been talking about a life of program agreement to kind of supersede a 10-year deal for, you know, every quarter now for a while. This was requested by MRAS and SDE, not by Park. We're happy to do it. It's under negotiation. We actually made some progress recently, but we'll see. You know, it's still a way to go to get the finish line. As we always say, we're happy either way. If we do the life program, that's wonderful. If not, we're okay too. Let's go on to slide 12. Keep moving along here. Still in GE. Updated GE Aerospace jet engine programs. So let's go through the programs a little more detail. First, we start with the Big Kahuna, which is the A320 aircraft family, includes all these different variants. As of March, Airbus has already delivered 4,553 of these airplanes and had a backlog of 7,412 of these airplanes. So you add those two numbers together, and that the total is a big number. This is a huge program, and, you know, could be the biggest commercial aerospace program ever, aircraft program ever. A320 Neo family aircraft deliveries, you see the pattern here, they're ramping up. In 19, they got to 561, and the pandemic hit, everything collapsed to down to 431, kind of is clawing our way back to the, you know, that 561 level. We kind of got there in 23, 24, 25, you know, inching forward to 50 a month, 51 per month. But let's go to the next slide, slide 13. Well, one more item before we get to that punchline. 26 year to date, only 136 deliveries. That's not so good. Off to a slow start, Airbus is with the A320 neo aircraft family. Why is that? What's going on? Well, Airbus have been targeting 75 neos per month by 27. They've been very public about that. So look at the prior page, we're kind of inching up to 51. We're nowhere close to 75. Airbus recently stated they expect to reach delivery rate only of 75, still backing off a little bit by the end of 27, stabilizing, that's their term, to a rate of 75 per month thereafter. So they're backing off a little bit. What's going on here? Well, why? What's the problem? Maybe we should consider the engine situation. So, sorry, it's a little complicated, but, you know, we need to give you the perspective, I think. The two approved engines for the A220 neo aircraft family. There's the CFM LEAP 1A engine, that's what we're on, and then there's the Pratt PW1100G engine. We're not on that program. So we supply into the A320 neo family aircraft using the LEAP engine, but we don't have any content on the A320 neo family aircraft using the Pratt engine. Important to know that. Let's go into slide 14. Now, according to the first quarter 2026 edition of Aero Engine News, that's our Bible, the CFM LEAP 1A market share firm engine orders for the A320neo was 66.2%. Now, that's interesting. Like, what the heck is that number about? You know, we cover this every quarter, and, you know, the number has been like 60%, 61%, 60%, 66.2%. That's not the historical number. That market share moved up. Well, it's sustainable. Well, it's a trend. We'll see. But at the delivery rate of 75 airplanes per month, 62.2% equals 1,192 LEAP engines per year. Can you remember that number? We'll get back to it later. You know, interesting number. The Pratt engine has, now here's the issue. The Pratt GTF engine has struggled with serious reliability issues. You probably read about this. You know, it's not a big secret. Reliability is a positive selling point for a CFM LEAP-1A. They upgraded one of the components recently for better reliability. And according to Airbus, this is recent, there is now a serious shortage of Pratt PW1100G engines. And Airbus indicated that's the main cause of their disappointing 2026 A320neo aircraft family deliveries. They're kind of putting the blame on this Pratt engine, not only with the reliability issues, now with shortages. Meanwhile, CFM has significantly ramped up production of their LEAP engine family, including the LEAP-1A. So let's keep going here. Let's see if we can figure out what really is driving all this. Slide 15. Could these factors lead to an even greater CFM LEAP-1A engine market share for A320? I don't know. Interesting question. Now, but we sort of read recently something that surprised us, which is Airbus now saying, well, you know, CFM is delayed on deliveries as well for the LEAP-1A, so I don't know what that means. The focus had really been on the Pratt engine. Now they're saying, well, you know, LEAP is fine as well, so not sure what to make of it. My guess is that if CFM can produce the engine, that they have an opportunity for more market share gains, but, you know, that's their business, not mine. As of March 31, there were 8,472 LEAP-1A engine orders. That's a lot of orders for engines. And if you look further later on in the presentation, we talk about our revenue per engine based upon current pricing. You can do your own math and figure it out. But, you know, we're talking about some very large numbers here. A320neo aircraft family program could end up being the world's largest commercial aircraft program ever. So we're very happy to be on that program. The A320neo aircraft program could end up being Park's largest non-defense program ever. And that goes back a long, long time. We're talking electronics, you know, back in the 90s and everything else. So that's a big statement. Let's go on to another LEAP program, which is the COMAC 919. That's a Chinese single aisle to compete with the A320 and the Boeing 737. COMAC is increasing manufacturing capacity to achieve production rates of 150 919 aircraft a year by 27 and 200 by 29. And they reportedly have over 1,200 orders for the 919 aircraft. Let's go on to slides. What are we at here? We're at slide 16. COMAC delivered two of these airplanes in 23, 14, 24, and 18, and 25. That's not a lot. COMAC was targeting 25. That's not a lot. 25 and 25, but didn't get there. So there are reports that CFM may be favoring Boeing and Airbus with LEAP engine availability. Now, these are different, three different engines. They're not interchangeable, but there's still a capacity question as to how many LEAP engines that CFM can produce. And the lack of availability of CFM LEAP-1C engines may explain the shortfall and may be emerging as more impactful to the ramp of the 919 aircraft program than originally anticipated by COMAC. Now, will this change improve for COMAC, not for CFM, as a result of the recent summit between President Trump and President Xi? The answer may be yes. There are reports that there is some plan to increase CFM LEAP-1C engine deliveries to COMAC as a result of that summit. So we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, you get the theme here. It seems like the engines are often the gating items on these programs. Interesting. Slide 17, let's talk about the 777X program. That's the third big program that we're dealing with G Aerospace engines. The 777X program, the GE9X engines, the 777X TEX program is massed over 1,500 flights, nearly 4,400 flight hours. We have 652 open orders for the 777X, and the certification test program seems to be moving along reasonably. Boeing anticipates FAA certification entry into service and first delivery of the 777X next year. This program is very, very, very delayed, you know, delayed a long time. I happen to be at Everett Field, and where Boeing makes these airplanes, in the I think the biggest building in the world, actually. And they're all over the field. They're everywhere. in a lot of cases, they don't have engines yet, waiting for engines, and obviously waiting for certification. They can't start delivering the airplane until they get the FAA certification. Let's go on to slide 18. So these points are kind of key. Our understanding is that the COMAC 919 aircraft and the Global 8000 aircraft are already being produced and delivered and are close to targeted rates. We covered that in that original slide where we, you know, broke down the different programs, so we didn't really deal with them in any detail. The point is that we're not expecting much upside from those programs because they're already being produced at their targeted rates. Clearly, the commercial aircraft juggernaut, as we call it, will be driven by the ramp-up of the A320neo aircraft family, the Boeing 777X, and the COMAC 919 aircraft. Okay, let's go on to slide 19. We're still talking GE Aerospace. Just some numbers for you here. GE Aerospace jet engine program sales history and forecast estimates. So in Q4, 8.1 million, and in fiscal 26, 29.3 million. See what happened here? Look at 20. We're kind of almost at 29 million right before the pandemic. And then, wow, look what happened in 21. Just dropped off a cliff. And we're clawing our way back in 26 to kind of get back to where we were in 20 right before the pandemic. It's been a long 5 years for the special commercial aircraft industry, that's for sure. So our forecast for Q1 for GE Aerospace program sales, 6.8 to 7.4 million. Our forecast for the year, 34 to 38 million. It would be a mistake for you to take Q1 for anything, multiply by four, and think that's, you know, what we're thinking about. It doesn't really work that way. The forecast for the year, that's based upon input we have. We call a build plan from our customer, and we haircut a little bit. You know, the number we got from our customer is actually higher than the forecast we're providing you. We're trying to be a little conservative here. Let's go on to slide 20. Okay, now let's talk about Park. Park numbers, Park financial performance history and forecast estimates. The top is just history, totals you already know about, the Q4 you know about, totals you know about, or you know about now anyway. Forecast estimate for Q1, 17.7 to 18.4 million in sales, 4.1 to 4.6 million EBITDA. Now, remember we talked about misshipments in Q1. We're expecting 1.3 approximately, significant amount of misshipments. We don't know yet. You know, Q1 ends on Sunday. We're so close to the end of the quarter that we can give you some perspective. Normally, when we announce, you know, the misshipments normally really end up being a phenomenon in the last few weeks of the quarter. So normally we announce we can't give you any perspective on it, but we're so close to the end of the quarter, we give a perspective. And it's the same kind of thing, you know, supply chain thing. We're not getting components as quickly as we need. Some shipping issues where if the freight forwarder doesn't pick it up, you know, international shipment, it's not a sale. You know, we don't have any sales cutoff issues at Park. You know, it's a sale when it leaves our dock. So you see, you know, we're kind of back in that mode now, and the industry is struggling because the industry is starting to re-struggle. It's like because things are ramping up aggressively. Things were quiet and things were kind of normalized and the industry kind of caught up, but now we're back to maybe getting behind the power curve a little bit. And we'll have to see how that pans out, but it may take a couple of years for the industry to, you know, get back up to speed, or maybe it'll always be behind because things are ramping so aggressively, you know, that as soon as they catch up, then they'll turn around, oh, we ramped more. We'll have to see about that. Slide 21. We're just, you know, trying to share the full perspective with you. Slide 21. Let's stop here for a second. I know we're kind of running late here, but our historical fiscal year results, because it tells a story that's kind of interesting, I think. Look at sales. This is aerospace only. We sold electronics, I think, in 19, but this is aerospace only. You know, 31.8 going year over year, 40.2, 51.1, 60. So from 17 to 20, we kind of were going up $10 million per year in aerospace, which is a lot. And then look what happened in 21. We just kind of fell off a cliff. There's a pandemic year. And 22, 23, 24, maybe 25, we try to crawl our way back to the, you know, the 20, the pre-pandemic fiscal year, and maybe just got there in fiscal 25. But it has been a difficult 5 years post-pandemic for the industry, that's for sure. Now, 26, it seems like we're breaking out a little bit with the sales of $73.3 million. So 26 is a little bit of a maybe departure, which is a good thing. Important themes: supply chain limitations, industry malaise while affecting aerospace industry post-pandemic. Yeah, the industry to us was kind of sleepwalking through those 5 years, you know, in a sense, state of malaise. And it was a long 5 years for us, that's for sure. I think a lot of people didn't really believe in us very much. We believe in ourselves, but we didn't, not too many people. I think we were kind of a forgotten company, that we were kind of lost and we know what to do. And we never felt that way. We always stayed focused. I think we worked very hard in our quarters, that's for sure. I know that. I don't think it. We had to listen to people tell us to sell the company at $12 or $13 per share. You like that? That's the kind of crap we had to listen to. It was a long 5 years. And, you know, we're in the industry, so there's not much we could do about it. But the industry was, to us, sleepwalking. Now, we'll get to that in a little while, but yeah, I think that's over. You know, the industry has gotten a pretty serious wake-up call, maybe shock treatment. We always want to remind you how much fabric sales were in these years, because they do drive the top line numbers and the bottom line as well. So I hope you don't mind that commentary, but you know, we thought, we're not complaining, we just thought you should know how we feel about things. You know, if you want to invest in Park, you should know how we feel. Slide 22. Okay, so let's talk about this. This is interesting stuff. We our buyback authorization. We purchased 718,000 shares of our common stock, $12.94 per share, $9.3 million. We didn't buy any stock in our Q4, Q1. Probably not shocked to hear that. So, you know, we used to comment that we really don't like buybacks so much, and we don't comment on our stock price, and only us can do that, except this is one exception. We said, when a price gets so stupid, we don't have a choice but to buy the stock. So we felt the price was goddamn stupid, and we bought a lot of stock at $12.94. So let's go on to the next slide. We juxtaposed the two slides for, you know, intentionally. Our recently announced public offering, that's slide 23. We announced this during the last quarter call. We filed an S3 registration statement and a prospectus supplement for $50 million at-the-market public offering. It was the purpose to replenish a portion of the $50 million plus, you know, with that plus sign, that we plan to invest in our major new manufacturing plant. We'll get back to that later. Other investments under serious consideration, we'll talk about that soon as well. And to ensure, this is an important one, that Park has the necessary funds to be in a position to take advantage of and exploit the key opportunities currently being presented to Park and the new key opportunities as they arise in the future. That's a little bit more of kind of an amorphous thing, but I think equally important. Now, let's go to numbers. During our Q4, under this registration statement, we sold 943 approximately shares of common stock for proceeds of $22.8 million and a price of $24.21 per share. So we bought the stock at $12.94. We sold it at $24.21. Now, I'll tell you something. I don't have an MBA. I don't have a degree in economics, but we come from, that's a pretty good deal, I think. So just wanted to mention those two numbers to you. Let's go on to slide 24. Here, still in the same kind of theme, Parks. balance sheet cash, and very, very incredible cash dividend history is our opinion, of course. We have zero long-term debt. That's not our opinion. Park reported about $89.4 million in cash and marketable securities at the end of the quarter. And you say, well, that's a lot for Park. And actually, it's not. It probably isn't even enough. We'll get to that later in the presentation. We talk about the expansion plan and the other potential investment that we're seriously negotiating. It's probably not enough money for Park. 41 consecutive years of dividends. Park has paid $613.7 million, $29.975 per share since 2005. So our next dividend, which we're announcing soon, that'll put us over $30 per share since 2005. We like to show the picture of our founders back in, Park was founded in 1954 with about $30,000 bucks, a small, wasn't a factory, it was a garage in Woodside, Queens. This actually is a step up. This is about 3 years later. This actually was a real factory in Flushing, New York, which I think was about 10,000 feet. With our founders in the picture. Slide 25. I'll try to hustle. I know we're taking too much time here. Financial outlook for GE Aerospace Jet Engine Programs, the commercial aircraft juggernaut. So for those of you who have been listening to our presentations, every quarter we say what? We say the juggernaut is coming. It can't be stopped. And we better be ready. We're not saying that anymore. We're saying the juggernaut is here. Commercial aircraft juggernaut is now. So let's kind of go through this quickly. Slide 26. We show you this every quarter. I just want to remind you the A320neo engine assumption per year 1080, that's based upon a 60%, that's based on 75 airplanes per year and 60% market share. But that market share, the actual market share, that gives us 1,192 engines, not 1080. We're still sticking with 1080 to be conservative here. That's millions of dollars of additional revenue. Just want you to be aware of that. And slide 27 goes through a lot of the math as to how we computed the numbers on time. Slide 26. So we won't spend time on slide 27. Slide 28. Okay, so here we go. Now we need to spend some serious time on this whole new juggernaut, extreme, we call it. Let's just go through some basics. Park's missile systems niche. Park specializes in the design and manufacture of advanced composite ablative materials used to produce solid rocket motor structures and heat shields for critical missile systems, including the PAC-3 Patriot missile system. We talk about that a lot, and we'll talk about it a lot during the presentation. I just want to flag here before I forget that there are dozens of missile systems that we work on. It's just that the Patriot has, so much notoriety, so well known, so we tend to focus on that more, just as an example. And the other programs you probably wouldn't want to talk about because, it's maybe not something for public consumption. But there are dozens of missile programs that we run. Park also designs and manufactures advanced composite structural materials used to produce other missile system components. Depletion of the depleted. Okay, here we go. It is well understood that critical missile system stockpiles are already badly depleted by the ongoing brutal war in Europe and last June's 12-day war in the Middle East. And now we have the war with Iran. The shell game. What's a shell game? That means moving the Patriot batteries from one country to another, to try to, be ready for the incomings. The shell game has been tried, but the law of diminishing returns is in play. There's only so many times the shells can be moved before there are no shells left to move. That's the problem, That's really the problem. Slide 29. There is much reporting about how badly stockpiles of critical missile systems, including the Patriot, PAC-3, and other systems report have been depleted as a result of the war with Iran. We're not going to report or cover the reporting here, as it could be irresponsible to do so. But you can check it out yourself. You can go find it yourself. We just don't want to go into that. Running empty. Yeah, running empty. Replenishing of depleted stockpiles. Well, that's obviously very urgent. There clearly is a highly urgent need to replenish the depleted missile system stockpiles. But is that enough? Does it end there? Maybe not. Quadrupling the production of exquisite class of weapon systems. What? The quadrupling? Are you kidding me? I don't know. Maybe not. Let's go on to slide, 30? On March 29, 2026, I guess a couple months ago, President Trump met with the White House with six top defense contractors, including Lockheed and L3 Harris Missile Solutions. The reason we mention those two is they're both, you know, very key for us on the PAC-3 missile system. At that meeting, contracts reportedly agreed to quadruple production of exquisite glass of weapon systems as rapidly as possible. Reportedly, that was reported by President Trump, I think, actually. This is a new world order for the defense industry, a radical and likely lasting change of the defense industry. The old days are likely gone for this defense industry, and that is a good thing in our opinion. So, like I said, the industry generally had been sleepwalking for 5 years, defense and commercial. But there's now this wake-up call. We have the NWO, we have the extreme depletion of the supply, and then this quadrupling scenario, which is more than a wake-up call, more than an alarm clock. It's shock treatment. What does the NWO mean for PARC? So this is really important for you to understand. Our experience is that the defense industry has entered into hypersonic mode. That's our personal PARC experience, not just what we hear. That's our experience, our day-to-day experience. In all years, we have never seen anything like this, particularly for ablative materials, for solid rocket motors, not even close. I've been at PARC since 1988. I've never seen anything like this, electronics or aerospace. The quoting activity, especially for ablative materials for solid rocket missile systems, has been hyper and frenetic, almost too much to bear, really. It's something we've never seen before. And it's hard to really describe and help you understand what we're experiencing. We're just trying to do the best we can here. And just in case it's not obvious, the PAC-3 missile systems and many of the other missile systems which PARC supports are very key members of that quote-unquote exquisite class of weapon systems. So let's keep going here. Missile systems on slide 31. We're not talking about specifically the PAC-3 Patriot missile system. PARC is sole source qualified for advanced composite ablative materials for solid rocket motors for the PAC-3 missile system program. The PAC-3 missile system is considered by many to be the world's premier missile defense system. So, you know, a lot of discussion about maybe it's not great for shooting down little drones, but for incoming ballistic missiles, yeah, that's a system everyone wants to have. Highly effective. We have covered the PAC-3 missile system extensively in recent quarterly investor presentations. We'll just hit the high points and new items here. Stockpiles of the PAC-3 missile system interceptors were already badly depleted by the war in Europe and last June's 12-day Minsk war. So we don't want to go into repeating reporting here, because it may not be appropriate responsible to do so, but suffice to say the current war with Iran is very badly depleted, the already depleted stockpile of PAC-3 and interceptors. The PAC-3 missile system interceptors have been extensively and very effectively, maybe too effectively, meaning so effective that everybody in the world wants them, used by U.S. allies in the region, the Mideast region during this war, including Saudi Arabia, UAE, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, Israel, defend against incomings during this Iran war. Slide 32, just a little side note here. Israel, you probably know this, also uses its own system called Arrow-3 and Arrow-4 for missile defense, and PARC is qualified and supports both those programs. Back to the PAC-3, as previously reported, on January 26, Lockheed announced it reached a 7-year agreement with the Department of War to increase PAC-3 MSC interceptor production from 600 to 2,000. You know, that's a lot. That's almost 4, isn't it? 4X. What about us? What have we been told by our customer? We're not going to tell you. We're not at liberty to, but we can tell you it's more than 2,000. On January 13, 2026, I think we covered this last time as well. Yeah, the Dow announced it investing $1 billion in the L3 Harris solid rocket motor business to boost solid rocket motor production for PAC-3 and other missile systems. That transaction is already closed, apparently. Slide 33, Continuing with missile systems, Aryan Group. We got to talk about Aryan Group now. We talked about PAC-3, now we got to talk about Aryan Group. Aryan Group is a joint venture. It's a large French company between Airbus and Safran. Our relationship with Aryan Group and its predecessors goes back to early 2000s. We have a very special relationship with Aryan, and we're proud to be their partner. And we don't take liberties, that term partner. That's their term. We don't do that. That's a term they use for us. I just want you to be aware of that. Aryan Group produces a proprietary product called Raycar G2B. Proprietary fabric, Raycar C2B, which is used to produce ablative composite materials for advanced solid rocket missile programs. So here's something highlighted. Parker sole source qualified on a solid rocket motor for the PAC-3 missile program for specially ablative materials produced with Aryan Group's proprietary C2B fabric. So we're kind of double sole source qualified. We're sole source, but also Aryan Group with the C2B fabric is sole sourced. Park entered into a business partner agreement with Aryan in January of 22, under which they appointed us as their exclusive North American distributor for C2B fabric. On March, this is something worth noting, March of 25, we entered into what they call the new agreement with Aryan, under which Park agreed to advance Aryan 4,587,000 euro to Aryan. That's about 5 million, I guess, against payments for future purchases by Park of C2B fabric. Okay, why did we do that? Slide 34. We paid the first installment, in Q1 of 26. We paid a second installment in Q1 of 27, and the third installment we paid, the third and last, I think, in Q1 of 28. What's the purpose of this big advance? Is approximately $5 million to fund 50-50 with Aryan the construction of additional C2B fabric manufacturing capacity in France. Will this in this capacity, that capacity will be online maybe I think in 28. Will this additional capacity be adequate to support the ramp up of the just the PAC-3 missile programs? Let's not even talk about the other programs on which C2B is getting qualified or is qualified. The answer is no, not even close, not even close. So what do we do now? Park is engaged in serious discussions with Aryan Group relating to an agreement to significantly increase C2B manufacturing, fabric manufacturing capacity in the U.S. to support critical Department of War missile programs, including the PAC-3 missile programs. The agreement under negotiation contemplates, this is important, Park making a significant investment in this C2B fabric manufacturing plant. Remember I mentioned our own expansion, and there is another investment here. We'll get to our own expansion in a minute. In our opinion, it's urgent that this C2B fabric manufacturing plant is built. So the interest in C2B is hyper and frenetic. So there are a lot of companies, a lot of customers, a lot of OEMs looking to sign up for C2B on their programs. The obvious challenge is supply. Probably take about 4 years for this plant to be built. What do we got going here? We got the NWO. We have the war where its systems have been badly depleted and quadruplings. That's driving a very, very, very hyper need for this C2B fabric, which is, like I said, considered the, my understanding, the premier product for missile systems, for solid rocket motors for missile systems. Let's go on to slide 35. This will tie together a little bit as well. Our new manufacturing plant, we're going so long here. An update. We talked about this for the last couple of quarters, but, we're regrouping with our new manufacturing plant. Why is that? Let's go through it. Park is planning to build a major new manufacturing plant. New plant will include the following manufacturing lines. This is going to review solution treating hot melt film, hot melt tape. What else? What else? Because we're always looking to expand and develop our business. We don't want to limit ourselves always to what we're doing now. New plant is being designed to produce and support our complete composite materials product line, including specially ablated materials, solid rocket motors, film adhesive materials, and lightning strike protection materials. What else? Well, again, we're looking always to develop into new areas. new related areas, not looking at going to making amusement park, merry-go-rounds or something like that. What has changed from the original plant design discussed just in our Q3 investor call in January? So hot mill, let's break it down. Is hot mill film and tape manufacturing capacity contemplated by the original plant adequate? Yeah, it probably is, actually. Let's go into slide 36. The hot mill film and tape lines primarily support Park's commercial aircraft programs, the commercial aircraft juggernaut. So we think we're okay with the commercial aircraft juggernaut. How about those solution treat? How about the solution treating capacity, though, contemplated by the original plant design? Is it adequate? No, it's not adequate. The current plant design contemplates the current. Now, I'm not talking about the original plant design from 3 and 4 months ago. The current plant design, the one we're working with now, contemplates additional solution treating capacity, but it still may not be enough. And we're evaluating increasing solution treating capacity even further. Why is that? The solution treating line support, among other things, Park's missile system programs. Yep, the missile systems juggernaut. So you see the connection here? The original plant design contemplated a plant design of 120,000 square feet. Will that be enough? Probably not. Because again, we're looking at increasing the solution treating capacity to support the missile systems juggernaut. So 120,000 square feet may not be enough. This is all coming at us pretty recently. So like I said, we're regrouping. We didn't know that there would be another war in Iran. We didn't know that President Trump would bring these guys in and say, you know, we got a new world order here, a new sheriff in town. You increase your missile production by 4 times. We didn't know that was coming. So we're trying to regroup and make the adjustments that are good for Park for the future. How much land are we looking for? This is important. We're looking for 20 acres. And why is that? Because the original plant, even with the, let's say, expanded footprint, let's say it's a little bit more than 120,000, that would fit within 10 acres very nicely. But we're looking for 20 acres because we want to have the ability to add another plant of approximately the same size at some point in the future. It's important for us that the plants are in the same campus. You know, we don't want a second plant across town. It doesn't work too well for us. So we want to have that ability to expand. That's why our spec is approximately 20 acres. Doesn't have to be exactly, but that's the concept anyway. Slide 37. Will the new plant still approximately double Park's current composite materials manufacturing capacity? No, it will more than double Park's current solution treating manufacturing capacity. Will the capital budget for the new plant still be approximately $50 million? I don't think so. No, it should be more than that. And I should say something, you know, this is the capital budget. What about working capital and, you know, startup costs? You know, it's just significant. And we're not even talking about that. Going back to that cash number of $90 million approximately, plus the amount where it's, you know, seriously negotiating investing with the Iranian plant in the U.S. You add those two things together and you say, yeah, we probably don't have enough money. Likely be more. Where will the new plant site be located? In the U.S. heartland, at a location which is supportive of, conducive to, and inspirational for Park's future development and growth as a company. So we're not just looking at it from a mundane perspective. We just need this many machines to make this much product. You know, it's about our future. Where we want to go for our future. For the next, we build a plant, we'll be there for 30 years. We've got to think 30 years out. Slide 38. Sorry it's taking so long, folks. We're building this new manufacturing plant. Why? Why are we doing it? Because our commercial aircraft juggernaut, missile system juggernaut extreme required. That's just basic math. You know, we need the capacity to support those juggernauts. Also, though, to enable, this is more futuristic thinking, enable, facilitate, inspire Park's holistic growth and development as a company for the future. After all, we're only 72 years young. So thank you, everybody, for hanging in there. Operator, we're done with the presentation. We'll be happy to answer any questions that investor may have at this point.
Thank you. And with that, we will indeed be conducting a question and answer session. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 to remove yourself from the queue. And for any participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for questions. And our first question comes from the line of Nick Ripostella with NR Management. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine, Nick. Yeah, how you doing?
Great. Good afternoon. It's nice to hear you all and that everything's moving along. Okay, I just wanted to, I've been thinking about this one for a while. On the C2B fabric, is there any alternative that's used in any missile programs that you know of?
Let's deal with that. That's a complicated question. There are stockpiles of two different types of fabric which are available, but they're not in production anymore, and there's no plan to put them back in production. So, interesting, since you brought up, this is my perspective on it, but not only mine. Until a couple months ago, I think some of the defense contractors were kind of counting on using those stockpiles. And think, oh, we got a long stockpile, lasts for many, many years. But when you take everything and multiply by four, they start to panic, like these stockpiles are not going to last very long at all. And that probably is one of the reasons that there's kind of a hyper interest in C2B. Now, there always are going to be efforts to develop new products that would maybe be, you know, would be, let's say, equivalent to C2B or could serve the same purpose that C2B serves. But what's existing in the market now, there are that are at the level of C2B. There are other ablative products that are not at the level of C2B in terms of capability. There are two products that are kind of close, but they're stockpiles that are being depleted and limited. So it's important. It's an interesting question, and the answer is maybe a little more complicated.
Okay, so do you consider that a risk? I mean, necessity is the mother of invention, you know.
That's some new products will be developed. Yeah, sure, it's a risk, but of course we would like to be involved, you know. And that's our attitude. We don't. I don't want to say too much more about it, actually, Nick. But yeah, we're not sitting back passively and saying, "Okay." So, I mean, we want to be the driver of new products as well, and at the same time, supporting everything we're doing with Arian, our partner. You know, we would never undermine them or do anything to hurt them. That we would not do that.
Okay. So, by the way, so all the manufacturing, that Arian, they have plants in France. So is that where tariffs would hit if there were any, on a product like that, or are you shielded from that somewhat?
Would tariffs apply to the product that's being shipped?
Yeah. In other words,
Yeah. Well, I think the answer would be yes. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious the answer is yes. Now, the tariff situation is changing, of course, and dynamic, but, tariffs did apply to products that were being imported from France.
Well, it's just I find it interesting, that the Department of War wants to, quadruple, the material's important, and it would seem like, they're shooting themselves in the foot by tariffing something that,
That's an interesting point. It's been brought up by us.
Yeah.
I mean, to the Department of War.
Okay. So is it fair to say that the missile programs, throughout the world that, are mostly using C2B, or is that an incorrect statement?
Missile programs, other programs.
Yeah.
So, ask if other missile programs. Oh, there's many different kind of missiles and many different kind of ablative materials.
I see.
C2B is considered to be, my opinion, but not only my opinion, the premier material, ablative material fabric for stealth rocket motors.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Okay. I'm sorry, but you can stop me if I'm going too much, but I've asked this before, and you already have a lot on your plate, but is there any content or work developing on anything with SpaceX or Blue Origin or others?
So we, yeah, Mark, if you want to chime, that's fine. I think we do a little bit of work with Blue Origin. My opinion is we'd love to do work with SpaceX. They're not solid rocket motor people. Solid rocket motors are for defense. They're one shots. You can't reuse a solid rocket motor. So when you think about SpaceX, they're big into reusing their rocket systems. They have a whole different kind of psychology about it. My opinion, and we talk about this internally, I'd love to be able to work with SpaceX. I'm not sure we're doing very much. Mark, Blue Origin, I think we're doing a little bit Blue Origin, aren't we?
Yeah, we're doing a little bit. I think most of that works in our parts business, Brian, our structures business. So, but we do supply some materials. But lately, it's been we've been building some parts for them.
Good.
Okay, fair enough. And one other thing. So are we expecting to do additional aftermarket stock sales? Maybe you need to raise more capital?
Yeah, so it's a $50 million ATM. I think we explained how much we raised so far, and it was only in our Q4. As we explained, we haven't raised any since the end of Q4, so the balance is still available, and we'll see. Well, I think we try to be very intelligent and very disciplined about the ATM. We said no a lot. In other words, on pricing. So I said, no, it's not going to work for us. We're trying to protect our existing shareholders. And I think we did quite an outstanding job of that, if you don't mind my saying so, Nick. We were quite disciplined, and we get offers. No, that's not going to work for us. So we want to be careful about how we do it. And I think we're quite disciplined, like I said. And I think it worked out fine. I was very happy with the results. And yeah, we'd like to raise some more money, and we'll have to see what happens.
Okay. Well, you know how I feel about it. Yeah.
We'll update you every quarter, though. Just, I don't want to, so go ahead. What were you about to say, Nick? We know how you feel.
No, you know how I feel. You've done, yes, an excellent job of caring for shareholders. There's no question about that. And just one little other thing here. You've been in this business for a long time, as you said. So will the new facilities you're building, are they much different? I know you highlighted some things in the call, but in terms of the technology, because I don't know, at some point in the last couple of years, you've talked about automation and things like that. I'm just curious because there is a lot going on in terms of extensive robotics and things like that, but maybe you're just not the type of process that could avail yourself of those things. But I'm just curious about your outlook.
Yeah, so we want to use those things as tools intelligently. We don't want to go into automation because it's quote-unquote cool, so we could show people in a factory, look how automated it is. Automation is complicated, and it's not, it's probably multiple edge to that sword. We talked about this internally, but it's an important point. Often automation is really good if you want to do the same exact thing every time, because machine, you're going to not make the mistakes people make. But if your kind of culture is about flexibility, responsiveness, urgency, changing things quickly, that's not really what automation is best at. That's what people are best at. So that's why I say, we want to use automation, but we want to be intelligent about it. We want to think it through. Where would we like to use automation? Where can it be helpful to us?
I hear you. I guess I'm one of those nerds that I watch too many videos of aircraft engines being built and autos. I find them fascinating. So yeah, just thought I'd. It's amazing the things that are people don't realize how complex it is, particularly on aircraft engines. But anyway, but all right, thank you for your time. And I just have to say, there's an old Bruce Springsteen song, "From small things, mama, big things one day come." And that is Park, you know.
Well, thank you very much. I've looked that one up. All right. I'm not familiar with that one, but I'll go check it out. But thank you very
Thank you
much.
so much. Thank you.
You take care, Nick.
All right. Good night. Good night.
Thank you.
Operator, do we need? Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, as a reminder, if there are any more questions, you can just press star one to get yourself in queue. Okay, that looks like there are no further questions at this time, so I'd like to turn the floor back to Brian Shore for closing remarks.
Thank you, operator, and thank all of you for listening and being patient with us. I know we went on really long. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. And so it's, I guess, the beginning of summer. Have a wonderful summer. We'll talk to you again pretty soon, I guess, kind of mid-July when we announce our Q1. And of course, if you have any questions, any follow-up questions, feel free to give us a call anytime. Thanks. Have a great day. Take care. Bye.
Thank you. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's teleconference. We thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines at this time and have a wonderful rest of your day.